What's going on out there? Hope everybody can hear me well. I'm still learning this audio software, but if you're out there, you're watching, listening under the sound of my voice, thank you so much for tuning in. This is the Talking About Podcast. I'm your host, TW. Listen, I know you got a ton of options for your entertainment, for your news, for your sports talk, wrestling talk, music talk, all of that stuff. So let me just start off by saying thank you for spending a few minutes of your time with me. Real quick before we get into the show, if you're watching this on the YouTube or Twitter stream or whatever, go ahead and share it out to somebody else. You know, let's bring more people into the conversation here. Make sure you like, comment, rate, and subscribe. Help your boy boost this page up. And let's get into it. So on today's show, we're going to talk about the fans turning on Liv Morgan. We're going to talk about whose fault that is and what can be done about it. We're going to talk about CM Punk's return to AEW and what that means for Jon Moxley and AEW going forward. We're going to talk about why it might actually truly be a new day for my New York Jets. And we're going to talk about the game dropping a 30-song album. I mean, like, did y'all hear this? I haven't heard the album. Listen, I haven't heard the album myself. But we'll get into that later. But first and foremost, we got to talk about the thing that was on everybody's mind up until Wednesday when CM Punk returned to AEW. And the thing that was on everybody's mind, that was on the tip of everybody's tongue more than anything else, was Triple H bringing back old NXT talent. This was a big thing. It was a big deal. Starting at SummerSlam, right? Starting at SummerSlam, we saw the return of Bayley and Dakota Kai and Io Shirai. They're calling her Io Sky now. And instantly, right? Boom. That's an injection of talent and energy into the women's division. Instantly makes the women's division a lot better. So I think everybody was pretty much on board with that, right? Then we saw something a little more interesting, right? A little more interesting, a little more controversial, something everybody wasn't necessarily on board with. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, on last week's episode of SmackDown, the end of the show, Roman Reigns comes out. He's doing his thing. Drew McIntyre comes out, calls Roman the tribal queef. Interesting choice of words. And, you know, Drew's acting like he's about to get in the ring and fight the whole bloodline, right? But then out of nowhere, the lights drop, the music plays, you start to see the fog. Drew McIntyre looks back towards the entrance ramp, and standing there, he sees Scarlett, right? We haven't seen Scarlett in forever, right? We haven't seen Scarlett in forever. But we see Scarlett, and of course, almost immediately after that, we see Karrion Kross. He jumps Drew McIntyre from behind, knocks him out, bangs his head into the stairs, knocks him out from behind. And then this was the interesting part. To me, this was the most interesting part of this whole little sequence. He gets ready to leave, and Scarlett comes up and puts the hourglass on the ring, in the ring, and they look at Roman and the bloodline. And he gives Roman, you know, the TikTok thing. Now, I thought this was interesting, right? I mean, first of all, there's no better way you could possibly debut somebody, right? Like, you debut this guy, you immediately put him in a primetime spot. You put him next to, you know, the biggest, most important person in your show. And you start a big question about what are they going to do with him going forward? Like, is he going to be a part of the title picture? Is he going to be, you know, what does this mean for everybody involved? When I saw this, I said, listen, you can't just threaten Roman Reigns and walk away, right? Like, this not going to end there. He's not going to, you know, pull up, knock out Drew McIntyre, threaten Roman Reigns, and then live happily ever after. It just don't work like that. It don't work like that. You're not going to walk up, threaten the boss, and just, you know, go on about your business. So he's involved now, right? He's involved now. You crossed the line, you stepped on Roman's toes, and you're involved now. You're a part of the show. You're a part of the story. you're involved in the Roman Drew McIntyre story. So how far into this story is he going to get? And how consequential is his involvement going to be? Now, he's not about to take those titles off Roman. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. No way. But could he be the catalyst for Roman losing those titles? Mike, Karrion Kross, we still got 4 or 5 weeks until Clash of the Castle. So they got a lot of story to build. So thank God we're not just going to get Roman and Drew McIntyre going back and forth, you know, cutting promos and waving around a big giant sword and, you know, whatever. They can only do so much for the next month. But now you add in Karrion Kross, right? You add in Karrion Kross, and it's just so many questions, right? It's so many questions. Like, again, how important is he going to be to what's going to happen at Clash at the Castle? Is he going to be a part of the match? I mean, listen, if you are Triple H and you want to find a way to get the title off Roman without having Roman take a pin, you could put Karrion Kross in that match, in that triple threat match, so he could eat the pin. He could eat the pin. Drew McIntyre gets the title. Roman can claim I was never defeated, so Roman doesn't lose anything. Coming off this 700, 800, 900 day reign, whatever, however long it'll be by the time we get to Clash at the Castle. You put Karrion Kross in there, you might have something, man. You might have something. I don't know if that's what they intend to do with Karrion Kross, but the most important thing is it makes it interesting. It makes it interesting because we don't know, right? We don't know. Again, what we do know is that this is TBD. We know this is to be continued. We know that he's not going to just walk up, lay out Drew McIntyre, who's been built like Superman, by the way, right? Like, when's the last time you saw somebody lay down Drew McIntyre? When is the last time you saw Drew McIntyre get left laying, right? Like, it doesn't happen often. It doesn't happen often. And when's the last time you saw somebody threaten Roman Reigns? Threaten Roman Reigns and get away with it. Again, it doesn't happen. I mean, a lot of people get at Roman. A lot of people do get at Roman. But nobody gets away with it. You know what I mean? You're not going to threaten Roman and his goons, the Usos. Shout out to the Usos, the goons. I love the Usos. I'm a big fan of the Usos. They're my guys. Jay Uso. That dude has got to be the most turned up person in the whole wrestling business when he comes through the curtain. So shout out to Jay Uso. Jay Uso is that dude. He brings that energy, love, whenever I see that dude on my TV. But as far as Karrion Kross is concerned, right, another ripple effect that the Karrion Kross appearance had was on the internets. The internets and the fans and the Twitter voices, the Twitter spaces, all the conversations going on. And a lot of people, you know, listen, some people didn't like it. My man, Brian H. Waters, shout out to Brian H. Waters. He was saying on the Mac Mania podcast, as Evan Mack would say, the Mac Mania podcast, shout out to them boys. My man Brian H. Waters was saying, you know, Karrion Kross really lost his mystique when he was having that run in NXT. Then he got hurt and had to go away and had to relinquish the title. And he said he just didn't look the same no more. And I'm sure a lot of people also thought the shine was off Karrion Kross after Adam Cole cooked him in that promo. Now, like, listen, that promo was wild. I mean, like, I found an interview with Karrion Kross talking about, you know, how they all talked it out, how they laid it out, and how he's just trying to set up and get some, you know, some nice heat for Adam Cole so that when he murdered Adam Cole, there would be a nice setup there. But in retrospect, if you could take that back, yeah. You probably shouldn't, because Adam Cole came out busting on that one. I don't think that was the best look for Karrion Kross. And I think it hurt the way a lot of people see Karrion Kross. You know what I'm saying? I think it hurt the way a lot of people see Karrion Kross. But the thing that a lot of people were really, I thought, just kind of hating about is they were comparing the debuts of Karrion Kross and the re-debuts of, you know, Bayley and Io Sky and Dakota Kai. And they were comparing those to people complaining about debuts on AEW. Now, let me just say, to me, these aren't apples to apples comparisons at all. Like, not even close. Not even close. When we were watching AEW, especially when they were building up to that Forbidden Door show, it seemed like, my God, every week they were bringing out somebody from New Japan that you may have never heard of, somebody from ROH that you may have never heard of, and they weren't doing anything to introduce these people. Right? They weren't doing anything to introduce people. Like, I remember when Will Ospreay came out. Will Ospreay comes out and they cut to the three dudes in the audience who were like losing their mind going, oh my God. Right? There's like three dudes in the audience going crazy doing that. They made sure to find all those dudes and put them on camera. But the majority of the audience, the majority of people who were watching that show or may have stopped by that show for a second, have no idea who Will Ospreay is. I'm sorry to tell you. But a lot of this stuff is a niche within a niche, right? Like, again, I watch Impact Wrestling. I love Impact Wrestling. But I know that that's not even, you know, not even close. It's probably the third or fourth most popular wrestling company. So if somebody from Impact shows up on WWE, right, like the state that Impact's in today, I'm not going to expect people to lose their mind over them. It doesn't matter how good I think they are, right? It doesn't matter how many great matches I've seen them do, right? I just know that they're not on that big of a radar. So you compare that to WWE re-debuting somebody who was already in the WWE developmental system, right? It's, you're just reintroducing it to your same audience. You know what I'm saying? It's the same audience that was already watching, right? Like, the people that are watching Raw and SmackDown, a lot of them are familiar with NXT because they've done a lot over the years to promote NXT, right? Remember when NXT was a part of Survivor Series, right? They pull up NXT people every year in the Royal Rumble. So whether you like it or not, like, the most people watch WWE. Like, it's not even close. The most people watch WWE. And so people are going to be more familiar with the audience that we're talking about is going to be more familiar with the people who might have appeared on NXT than the people who appeared in New Japan, the people who appeared in ROH. Like, let's not forget, ROH died. Right? Like, ROH died because people stopped watching it. People stopped watching it. People stopped going to the shows. People stopped spending money on Ring of Honor. That's why Ring of Honor died. Right? This is not about hating and trying to downplay Ring of Honor. Like, I'm not WWE is so great guy. Like, that's not me. That's not me at all. Like, I call out anybody for something good. I give them credit for something good. I call out anybody for something bad. Like, I don't care. Like, I don't have no loyalty to the organization. Ain't none of these companies putting money in my pocket. But to me, it's just crazy to act like there's something weird about more people recognizing someone who was in NXT appearing on a WWE show than people watching AEW and having no idea who these ROH and New Japan talents are. Like, it's just not the same thing. Like, I'm sorry that you are a faithful watcher of New Japan and you just wish we were sophisticated enough to watch New Japan with you. But, you know, listen, one day maybe we'll catch up and we'll all be as good and smart wrestling fans as you are, and we'll all, you know, enjoy New Japan too. But in the meantime, in between time, you work your thing and I work mine. But but yeah, I mean, look, so Karrion Kross debuting, Io Sky, Dakota Kai, and Bayley coming back, these are great things. These are great things. And it leads a little further into what we're starting to see, right, from the Triple H regime being the head of creative here at WWE. I don't work at WWE. At WWE. The storytelling, much better. Much better. Again, you can complain that you had no idea who Karrion Kross was, but whether you knew who he was or not, when he came out, knocked out the number one contender for Roman Reigns, and threatened Roman Reigns, he's instantly interesting. He matters right away. He matters right away. There's no way you can you can take away from that. You put him in the most important storyline with your biggest star, he matters right away. Like, there's no way around that. That's called smart booking. That's called smart booking, right? They're introducing new characters. And I mean, look, man, and here's another thing that I was hearing a lot is, oh, you know, Triple H could have come out in the ring and took a dump and people would have been like, it's the greatest thing ever. And you're right. You're right. A lot of people feel that way. A lot of people do feel that way. I don't necessarily feel that way, but you got to respect the fact that Triple H is getting the benefit of the doubt. Why is Triple H getting the benefit of the doubt? Triple H is getting the benefit of the doubt because Triple H ran the NXT Black and Gold and it was stupid hot fire, right? Like there was a time when that NXT Black and Gold brand was the best thing in wrestling. It was really outstanding. The matches were great. The characters made sense. Everything, you know, every little feud seemed to matter between all the people. They made the tag teams matter. They made people who weren't in championships situations matter. You could see people being built and groomed for shots at the title. And the storytelling was thorough and well done. And the things that happened made sense. That's what people remember Triple H for. That's what people remember Triple H for as a booker. And so, yes, Triple H is going to get the benefit of the doubt when it comes to booking these shows. Because, again, you saw him do well. And you're going to give him a chance to do well before you turn on him. Like, that just makes perfect sense to me. I mean, like, if that don't make sense to you, I don't know what to tell you. But that makes perfect sense to me. All right, moving right along here. Sip of coffee for the working man. So, we led with the Roman Reigns stuff, okay? We led with the Triple H stuff. We led with the Karrion Kross stuff. But let's be honest. The most important thing, the most fun thing, the most interesting thing that happened in wrestling this week was the return of CM Punk. Let's be honest. Let's be honest. CM Punk reappearing on AEW television after a prolonged absence with a broken foot, an appearance at Comic-Con in which he made comments that got everybody riled up, people calling him the most bitter man in wrestling and all of that stuff. He spoke on Sasha and Naomi. He got everybody riled up. You can say what you want to about CM Punk, but he's interesting. He's interesting in a way that, let's be honest, a lot of AEW is not interesting. When CM Punk talks, people listen. Just stop me when I'm wrong. Stop me when I'm wrong. When I'm saying something that's wrong or incorrect, please interrupt me. Tell me to stop. Tell me to shut the hell up. But I'm not wrong. I believe somebody posted that on AEW's YouTube page, on AEW's YouTube page, they posted a clip of CM Punk. And that clip did something like a million views in like 12 hours, okay? The numbers don't lie. Hov said a long time ago, men lie, women lie, numbers don't lie. The numbers don't lie. People are interested in CM Punk. When CM Punk shows up, people want to know what happened. When CM Punk says something, people want to know what he said. When CM Punk is wrestling, people want to know if he still got it, if he can still go. Opinions differ on whether or not he still got it, whether or not he can still go, but it doesn't matter because what matters is that whether you like it or not, CM Punk is still interesting. He moves the needle. He moves the needle. Okay? He moves the needle, and that's why, unfortunately for Jon Moxley, CM Punk is getting that title back. CM Punk's getting that title back, and you know, it kind of sucks for Jon Moxley, to be honest with you. Like, I was never the biggest Jon Moxley fan. Obviously, I was familiar with him from, you know, his time playing Dean Ambrose in WWE. And WWE just never made the Dean Ambrose character something I was interested in, right? Like, they had him being like, wacky Dean, I'm gonna talk to a plant, I'm gonna steal a hot dog cart. And you're like, is he supposed to be Stone Cold? Is he supposed to be, you know, Doink? Like, what exactly was Dean Ambrose supposed to be in WWE? I could never quite get it, right? I could never quite, you know, put my finger on exactly what Dean Ambrose was supposed to be. So when he showed up in AEW, I wasn't like, oh man, Jon Moxley, this is the man, right? Like, I never had that type of feeling. But He finally got his title run, and unfortunately for him, you know, most of John Moxley's title run was during the, you know, the COVID quarantine, right? So he was the champion while everybody was locked in their house, right? Like, he was performing in front of different AEW wrestlers just, you know, surrounding the ring, banging on the ring to make noise. And, you know, that kind of stinks for him, right? Because I feel like you can't really get a good gauge of how crowds were reacting to him, like how fans were really reacting to him, because the majority of his title reign was, you know, during that time, right? So even if you see somebody in front of the crowd as champion for, you know, 1 week, you know, 2 weeks, 2 months, right? Like, over time, how do people feel about you, right? Look at Hangman Page, right? Hangman Page, somebody the AEW fans were so excited about. Oh, this is one of our pillars. This is one of our guys. Hangman Page got that AEW World Championship, and people did not give a damn. People didn't care. People didn't care. I mean, like, again, I'm sure that the fans who have been riding with Hangman Page since, you know, whatever, I'm sure he's probably from ROH because all the AEW guys are from ROH. So people who have been riding with him since way back when, I'm sure, you know, they were really excited for him. But to me, I'm somebody who approached AEW as somebody who just is a wrestling fan, right? Like, I watch anything that you call wrestling. You know what I mean? I give it a shot. You know what I mean? I give it a shot. If you call it wrestling, like, I'll check it out for at least a few minutes. So I didn't have, like, any preconceived notions of Hangman Page. I didn't have any loyalty to Hangman Page, right? Like, I wasn't necessarily invested in his success one way or another. And you could see that the fans at large, right? The fans at large, they liked Hangman Page, but unfortunately for him, while he was champion, Bryan Danielson and CM Punk showed up, and all of a sudden, you weren't so interesting anymore, okay? So, you know, so again, it's important to see over time, right? How does the crowd treat somebody as the champion? How does the crowd react to the same person winning over and over and over again? You can say the same thing about Roman Reigns, right? Roman Reigns, his title run is coming up on 3 years or something like that. Like, I mean, this feels like forever. But to WWE's credit, it hasn't been a stale title reign, right? Like, there's been interesting parts at every level of it. But even still, like, fans are getting to a point where they're getting a little tired of, you know, of Roman as champion. It is what it is. Wrestling fans are fickle, call it what you want, but you can only last in front of wrestling fans with the same thing for so long. So we didn't really get a chance to get a good gauge on CM Punk having a long reign as champion. And we didn't get a good gauge on Jon Moxley having a long reign as champion in front of a live audience. So when CM Punk had to go away hurt and Jon Moxley filled in as the interim champion, a couple of things they've been doing that have really made this, you know, just top notch to me. One, every time Moxley gets an interview, he makes it a point to talk about how annoyed he is by the interim title. And he's putting down the gauntlet right there. Like, he's telling you, like, you know, I'm not the interim champion, I'm the champion. He's like, where's your champion, right? And on top of that, look at the run of matches Jon Moxley has been putting on in this time as AEW champion. Like, these matches have been phenomenal. These matches have been phenomenal. He just had a match with Jericho. You know, like, all the matches that he has had, just outstanding stuff, man. And this is the first, I think, real run Jon Moxley has truly had as AEW World Champion. And I think it kind of sucks that he's going to have to pass that title back to CM Punk. You know what I mean? I think this is a time when Jon Moxley really has a chance. Let me say it like this. AEW has a chance. I think AEW has a chance here to really kind of put their stamp on the fact that, well, see, I can't even say that. I was going to say they got a chance to put their stamp on the fact that they're not just a company for WWE castoffs, but you could call Jon Moxley a WWE castoff. You could call CM Punk a WWE castoff. So if you're choosing between two guys who are ex-WWE guys, you don't really get a foot to stand on. You don't really get a foot to stand on. But I think that Jon Moxley has, in my eyes, established himself as more of an AEW guy. He's been in AEW since damn near the beginning. I think he came in shortly after it started. But he's been in AEW for a long time. Again, this is his second time as the champion. And he's a different character in AEW than he was in WWE. To me, Jon Moxley in AEW is not rehashing Jon Moxley in WWE. Again, like, this is not Dean Ambrose. This is a different guy. He's doing different stuff. He's, you know, like, he's presented differently. You know, like, so to me, like, I don't feel like he's just rehashing his old act. Like, I don't feel like he's trying to, you know, redo the same thing that he was doing before. So to me, this is a different guy. Like, I don't see this as the same guy. CM Punk, on the other hand, CM Punk is CM Punk, right? Like, CM Punk, like, I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But I'm saying he brings to the table what he brings to the table, right? Like, he's, you know, I'm gonna hit you hard on the mic. You know, I'm real, you know, like, that's CM Punk stuff. That's what he's gonna give you no matter where he is. The persona doesn't change, which is cool because as a fan, you know what you're getting. Either you like it or you don't, either you support the guy or you don't, like, it's cool, but at least you know what you're getting with CM Punk. So you could argue that what Tony Khan is buying is the same thing that WWE already built and promoted, right? So, in my opinion, in my humblest of humble opinions, I think they should stick with Jon Moxley, man. I think they should stick with Jon Moxley. I think Jon Moxley should get the victory over CM Punk and really put his stamp on a new era of again, like, just moving past the big pop. Now, they won't do that. I don't think they'll do that. And I'm going to tell you two reasons why I think they won't do that. One, because like I mentioned earlier, anything that AEW does that has CM Punk's face or name on it, numbers through the roof. Numbers through the roof. And, I mean, God, look at the way Tony Khan lost his mind defending CM Punk at that media scrum, okay? Like, Tony Khan is fully and completely invested in taking this ride with CM Punk as the head ornament of AEW. And look, I just think it's unfortunate for Jon Moxley because I think Jon Moxley's putting in the work. I think he's putting in the work, and what he's producing, what he's doing is interesting. Like, I'm interested to see. I mean, like, listen, I can do without, you know, people just bleeding a gusher each and every week. Like, I don't need all that. But you can't front on the matches. You know what I mean? Like, you can't front on the matches he's putting in. You can't front on the character that Jon Moxley is presenting. Like, Jon Moxley seems like a guy who cares deeply about being the AEW world champion, right? Like, he seems like a guy who cares deeply about defending that title and being the one that, you know, represents the AEW fans. So, you know, you can't say that he's not a great representative for the AEW world championship. You know, like, it's tough to say, does anybody deserve something in a scripted sport, right? Like, we're talking about, like, this is a TV show, right? It's a TV show. Like anything else, you cast people into roles and they play the role you cast for them, right? So it's tough to say who deserves something or who doesn't. But Moxley's putting in the work, man. Moxley's putting in the work. And for me, as a fan, I don't feel, like, loyal to AEW, right? Like, I don't feel biased or connected to any, you know, to the AEW cause, the AEW mission. I don't know, man. Like, I kind of want to see Moxley keep going. And I think that seeing, even though Moxley has really run through everybody who he's faced, seeing Moxley beat CM Punk for the title would validate Moxley's title reign. Because, again, it would say that this is our guy. Tony Khan has, like, literally sat next to CM Punk in the media scrum and defended this guy tooth and nail, and that's saying this is our guy, right? Like, he's giving you the numbers to explain why this is his guy. So, I mean, look, you know, if You want to say Moxley's your guy? Let him beat the guy everybody already knows is your guy. Now, here's the other thing, the other reason why I think CM Punk is getting that title back off of John Moxley. MJF. You know, the MJF story was a lot of fun. It was very interesting as it was developing. Everybody had an opinion on it. They let MJF do the shoot promo. And then they gave MJF a vacation, right? If, you know, could that be a situation where Tony Khan said, look, man, I'm not going to change your contract, but I'll give you 3 months off and we'll keep your pay the same. Go home and I'll pay you. And we'll kind of say that that kind of bounces out that way, you know, by you not having to work and still getting paid. I don't know. It could be something like that. But they've kept MJF off TV, which I think has been very smart, right? Because it's building a lot of anticipation for people to see MJF again. I think his absence is glaring. His absence is glaring, especially when you see somebody like Wardlow, right? I mean, listen, Wardlow, when he was working with CM Punk, Wardlow seemed like the future of AEW. He seemed like the hottest thing. You know, they were booking him like a young Goldberg, you know, all of this. You take away MJF, the heater of all heaters, right? The man who could talk up a fight in a what they call a place where nuns live? Wherever that. Anyway, but you take away CM Punk, right? The super heater. And how interesting does Wardlow look, right? Like Wardlow comes out and, you know, like, I'm not saying he's doing a bad job, but it's just not nearly as interesting. Like, come on, man. Tell me that y'all have been interested in Wardlow. Y'all have been truly, like, compelled to see Wardlow beat. Who's Wardlow working with right now? Oh, he's working with Jay Lethal, who's dope. Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt and those dudes. Like, those dudes are doing a great job. Those dudes, they're interesting. They're doing they got Satnam Singh, the big giant. They, Sanjay Dutt, you know, like with the suits and the trash talk. Like, that's a good act. That's a really good act for Wardlow to work with. But, I mean, come on, man. You're not going to tell me that you think Wardlow is as interesting now as he was when he was working with MJF. It's not close. It's not even close. And again, that's not a diss to Wardlow. That's not a diss to Wardlow, but being a professional wrestler, to me, the true test of are you a great professional wrestler is can you make me interested in what you're doing? Again, Becky Lynch, right? Like the run Becky Lynch just had that's a case study in what it means to be a professional wrestler. Like, can you make me interested no matter what you're doing? Look at some of the people Becky Lynch has worked with over the past year. Do you think Liv Morgan would be the women's champion right now if she didn't work with Becky Lynch a couple of months ago? Do you think people would care enough about Liv Morgan for her to be champion if she didn't have those matches with Becky Lynch where she came oh so close, but she just couldn't beat Becky Lynch. She couldn't beat Big Time Bex, right? That's what being a main attraction is about. Am I interested in you no matter what you're doing? That's to me, right? To me, for my money, that's what makes a great professional wrestler. That's what makes a great professional wrestler is, again, making me interested. And just, you know, from Wardlow, like, I'm not seeing that right now. I'm not seeing that right now. Again, like, the Powerbomb Symphony is great, you know, all of that. You know, I'm sure they're going to keep building them. And look, the dude's, you know, he's damn near a rookie in the game. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying this dude should be as good as Becky Lynch, but I'm just saying. You take MJF out of the equation and it's not exactly as interesting. It's just not, right? Like, that's the difference. That's the difference between the people you pay and the people you don't, right? So MJF is coming back, right? Once his vacation or sabbatical or whatever you want to call it is done, MJF is coming back. And MJF is coming back for the AEW championship. MJF is going to be the AEW champion and he's going to beat CM Punk for the AEW championship. Like, that's just the way that has to work. There's, you know, like he's done months and months and months of programming with CM Punk, and there's nobody that will be a better person for MJF to take that title from than CM Punk. Because fans love CM Punk. AEW fans love CM Punk. They see, you know, AEW fans see CM Punk the way TNA fans looked at Sting. I'm going to say that one again. AEW fans look at CM Punk the way TNA fans looked at Sting. What does that mean, right? It's you know this is not your guy, right? Like, you know this is not a homegrown guy. You know this is not a guy who, you know, a guy who came up on your show. But he's here now, and you're going to look past everything else that happened before. You don't care if he was buried. You don't care if he was great. Like, whatever. He's on your show now. You're going to treat him like he's your guy. That's the way AEW fans look at CM Punk, the same way that TNA fans looked at Sting. Don't at me. So, you got AEW. Oh, God, I'm choking. I'm dying live on the internet. You got CM Punk. You got MJF. MJF has to get that title. He has to get it off of CM Punk. And, you know, and that'll be your interesting story going forward, right? Like, it, you know, the whole thing about MJF being one of the pillars of the company, all of that stuff. If you think about all the other people who have been considered pillars, they've had plenty of time working as champions before, right? Like, you know, Jungle Boy has been a tag team champion. Sammy Guevara has been the TNT champion. Who else? Britt Baker, she's been the women's champion. Who else was they considering like a pillar? But whatever. All those guys, you know, those guys have all had time as champion. And MJF hasn't had a title yet, but that's for a reason, right? Because MJF feels too important for the TNT title, right? Like, everybody, that title has been passed around like a frisbee. Like, you know, there's no prestige in the TNT title. I'm sorry to say it. There's no prestige in that TNT title. MJF is too big for that title. MJF is a world champion, right? Like, I hate to be here singing the praises of MJF because I mean, like, you know, but it is what it is. Like I said, the art of pro wrestling is making people care, and MJF makes you care in a way that really almost nobody else in AEW really does. So, unfortunately for Jon Moxley, CM Punk's got to get that belt back, because CM Punk's got to drop that belt to MJF, and that's all there is to it. So, a swig of coffee for the working man. Ah, where my girls at? Let me talk about ladies real quick. Listen, here on the show, I love to give some love to the women in the world of professional wrestling. I think it's so important that we recognize all the great and wonderful things the women in the world of professional wrestling do. So every week on this show, I'm going to make it a point to talk about the great things I see from the women in professional wrestling. I'm going to talk about, you know, who I think is doing the best, you know, what I think the best storylines are. You know, yeah, you know, I got to figure out a good name for this segment. But right now we're going to talk about where my girl's at. And yeah, so listen, we're going to go ahead and we're going to get right to this. We're not even going to really, we're not going to mess around. Let's see here. Without a doubt, the most interesting thing that has happened, the most newsworthy thing that happened in the world of women's wrestling this week is what happened to Liv Morgan. Give it up for Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan, listen, Liv Morgan, shout out to Liv Morgan. We love Liv Morgan. Everybody loves Liv Morgan. I love Liv Morgan. You love Liv Morgan. We all love Liv Morgan. But what happened this week when Liv Morgan came out, and had to explain, what happened between her and Ronda Rousey at SummerSlam? When Liv Morgan was trying to explain what happened between her and Ronda Rousey at SummerSlam, the fans weren't buying it. The fans were not buying it. She comes out and she's like, oh, you know, I tapped out, but I only tapped out after I knew she was counted for three. After I knew she was counted for three, that's when I tapped out because I'm just smart, I guess, right? Like, whatever her cause was. And look, you heard, man, you heard. The fans weren't buying it. The fans were not buying Liv's excuse as to why she was, why she tapped out to Ronda Rousey in her match at SummerSlam. And can you blame them? Right? Can you blame them? I can't blame them. Because look, man, this is wrestling. This is wrestling. And like, the thing is, in wrestling, we can have our favorites. We can have our people we like. We can have our sentimental favorites. We can have, you know, a lot of times in wrestling, we will just want to see somebody different. We just want to see somebody, anybody different, right? Especially, again, when you look at the way that WWE, you know, has booked a lot of people, the way the WWE presents a lot of people, when they present somebody as strong, they just dominate everybody, right? Like, when WWE presents somebody as being strong, like Charlotte, like Roman, right? Like, they just crush and dominate everybody. And whether you like it or not, you can call wrestling fans fickle. You can call them what they want. But people don't like to see that. You know why people don't like to see that? Because most people don't dominate, right? Like, most people don't dominate. Like, think about it. In college, in women's college basketball, people used to hate on the UConn women. Hate on the UConn women. Oh, it's because there's not enough good women's players to go around. Oh, Gino Auriemma, you getting all the good players. Of course you're supposed to beat everybody. You got all the good players, Gino, right? They hate on Alabama. Oh, if Alabama gets 10 people injured, they got 10 more five-star recruits behind them, right? People hate a team that wins all the time. They hate on LeBron. People hate success. Some people love success. Some people love excellence. But a lot of people don't. You know why? Because a lot of people aren't excellent. And I'm not saying that to be a hater. I'm just saying people don't relate to that. People don't relate to that. So a lot of times when you're watching a WWE, you know, program, right? And they're presenting, oh, Ronda Rousey again, Charlotte Flair again, Roman Reigns again. A lot of times people just want somebody different, right? And a lot of times people want to see that underdog. They want to see if that underdog can win. And that's where you get Liv Morgan, right? People love Liv Morgan because Liv Morgan represents that underdog. They love Liv Morgan because Liv Morgan has the passion, right? That's the thing Liv Morgan says so much. Every time she goes, oh, nobody wants this more than me, right? She was at, when she was on the bump, she's like, oh, the fans actually want me to be champion. And they did. They did. They did. But at some point, you got to give people more than I love this more than anything. This is wrestling. This is wrestling. And people watch wrestling, whether they want to admit it or not. Even the new age wrestling fans who, you know, say they don't have a problem with a lack of realism. You know, it's all about suspending your disbelief. Like, oh, you say that. But the thing you love most is Roman Reigns. The thing you love most is Brock Lesnar. The thing you love most is the Charlotte Flairs and the Becky Lynches. The people who make you feel something. And Liv Morgan made you feel something. Liv Morgan made you feel that sympathy and that connection for that underdog, right? You felt for the underdog. But again, once you get that feel-good moment, what else is there? What else is there? Like, I agree that the way that her SummerSlam match with Ronda Rousey ended, that didn't do Liv any favors. Okay? That didn't do Liv any favors. But I also say, what else were you going to do? You weren't going to have Liv, you know, do her finisher on Ronda Rousey and pin Ronda Rousey clean in the middle of the ring. You could have. Right? I think Alexa Bliss had like 5 title reigns of doing stuff like that, right? Like she would do like, she had her punch, right? She had a, right? Alexa Bliss had her big punch and she just knocked people out. Remember when she cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase on Nia Jax and she came out and she just hit her in the arm with the briefcase and Nia fell, oh, my arm. I'm going to lay here while you climb up to the top rope and give me a splash. Like that. Listen, it makes fans roll their eyes. It makes fans roll their eyes. People aren't stupid, right? Like we're wrestling fans, but you know, contrary to popular belief, we're not stupid, right? So look, man, you got to give people something they can feel, something they could get behind. And there was almost no logical way you're going to have Liv Morgan beating Ronda Rousey clean in the middle of the ring. There's almost no way to sell that. And the reason why there's no way to sell that, it's not because Liv is, you know, short or yada, yada, yada. It's because Liv doesn't present like a fighter. Liv presents like that scrappy underdog that people love. And that's great that Liv presents in that way, right? It's great that Liv presents in that way. People love that about her. But that's not something that makes people feel like they're watching a fight. That's not something that makes people feel like it makes sense what I'm seeing right now, right? And if people don't feel like it makes sense what I'm seeing right now, then they're gonna roll their eyes or they're gonna let you know, they're gonna boo, right? They're gonna do that because what they're seeing doesn't make sense. Now, is that necessarily Liv Morgan's fault? Not really. She is who she is. She wrestles how she wrestles. She looks how she looks. It is what it is. But I'll tell you this. If you want to keep Liv Morgan playing the scrappy underdog, just glad to be here, living out my dream, this is the greatest thing ever. If you want to keep her doing that, she's going to die a death. She's going to die a death. Nobody is going to, people aren't going to keep cheering for Liv Morgan if you don't book her in ways that make sense. You got to book her in a way that, again, that follows logically with what people are seeing. So what would I do here? What would I do here? I'd turn Liv heel. I would keep having Liv win matches in manners like that are a little underhanded, and I'd have her keep playing innocent, like, oh, no, this still is, you know what it is? It's the same thing you just tried to do with Lacey Evans. Have Liv keep winning in these sneaky, underhanded ways. Have the fans keep going, boo, no, you're cheating, you tapped out, right? And eventually have Liv be like, bleep y'all. Right? Like, have Liv be like, I do whatever I gotta do to keep this title. I'm the champion and y'all not taking this from me. That's what I'd do if I was Liv. Turn Liv into somebody who the fans want to see lose this title. Because whether you like it or not, you're already doing that. You're already turning Liv into somebody who fans want to see lose this title. I'm telling you, you took somebody who was their scrappy underdog, the person they loved, the person they were rooting for, and you had them win in an underhanded way. And even though you had Ronda Rousey do kind of an official heel turn after that, Ronda Rousey went away. So there's no Ronda Rousey. So it's not like Ronda Rousey is out there bullying Liv Morgan, where you can still root for Liv Morgan and feel sympathetic. You're not gonna feel sympathetic if Liv Morgan keeps winning the championship or retaining her championship in ways that she shouldn't be retaining her championship, right? So, I mean, look, man, like, to me, like, this could be the beginning of the end for Liv Morgan. This could be the death of Liv Morgan, or this could be the start of something really good for Liv Morgan. You know what I mean? This could be the start of something really good for Liv Morgan. This could be the start of Liv Morgan becoming what they call a chicken shit heel. You know what I mean? Somebody that keeps just stealing victories and people just want to see Liv get her comeuppance. That's what I do. I think if you do that with Liv, that'll make Liv hot. And people will like Liv. People will like Liv if she starts taunting. Because that's the way a lot of people feel. A lot of people feel like, oh man, I can't get over. I'm going to do what I got to do to get over. And we're just going to figure it out. I'm telling you, a lot of people, I think a lot of people get behind Liv if you do it that way. But I'm telling you, don't run Liv back out here another Friday talking about, I want this more than anybody. Because they're going to boo her ass out of the building. You know, like it or not, like you can call wrestling fans fickle. You can call them copycats. You can say they're all copying what they see one audience do. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's not. But the reality is, time is up for the underdog Liv Morgan story. Liv needs to be all the way bad, or you need to put her back in a position where she's fighting from an underdog role. And if you're going to do that, then we got to start seeing her actually fight. She can't be getting her ass kicked for the whole match and then win with some, you know, some super fake looking offense. Like she's got to start putting together some matches where people can, you know, root for her. You know what I mean? Where she's giving people something to cheer for other than, that's my girl. I need to see her win. Like, you know, no, you need to do something. You need to do something, right? Like people got to see you actually do something that they like. So I don't think Liv Morgan is dead in the water. I think it's actually an opportunity for something really interesting to happen with Liv Morgan. We'll see where that goes. Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm over on AEW. They're getting ready to put these two together for a match. And I mean, look, the angle they're doing is they were doing a tag team. It was called Thunderstorm. And, you know, now somebody got injured. Statlander got injured. And, you know, Toni Storm's going to take her place. So now they're going to start building a little bit of, you know, animosity and tension between those guys, between those ladies. And it's going to lead to a match. I mean, look, man, they got to do something to make this interesting. Because Thunder Rosa is too good. Toni Storm is too good. They got to find some way to make this interesting. Because right now when I see it, I know the match is going to be good. I'm going to watch the match, but I'm not going to be invested from a storyline standpoint. And again, to me, when it comes to wrestling, like that's the most important thing is do I care about the match, right? Do I care about the match? I'm going to watch the match, but do I care about the match? You know what I'm saying? Like that's, do I care about the match? So they got a long way to go to actually make me care about the match. I'm looking forward to it. One of the interesting things in the world of women's wrestling that I think happened this week is the announcement that Madison Rayne from Impact Wrestling is signed on with AEW as a coach. I think that's great because you got people like Jade Cargill, who again, to me, Jade Cargill is, she's been the best thing on AEW TV for a long time. And to give her some more seasoning with wrestling. See, the AEW has a lot of people who don't have great ring experience, right? And Jade Cargill is a star. She's a super duper star. But, you know, like she's got the ring work has to get to a point where she can carry people, where you can put Jade out there with people who don't know what they're doing and she can still produce an interesting match. Like Jade, again, you see Jade, right? You look at the physique, you know, she's got the big pump kick. You know what I mean? Like she's beautiful. The whole deal, like she's a star 110%. Like there's no way around that. But at some point in wrestling, people are going to start critique. People have already critiqued her work. But I mean, again, we've all been watching Jade learn on the job for like, you know what, two, three years now. And, you know, at some point, the natives are going to get restless and they're going to be like, oh, well, why isn't she better by now? Yada, 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 yada. So adding somebody like Madison Rayne, I think, is a huge deal for the AEW women's division. I think we're going to see a lot of the women's work get better. And yeah, man, I think that's a good thing for everybody involved. Most importantly, it's good for the fans, right? It's good for the fans. Better matches, that's good for everybody. All right, so Let me turn away from wrestling here a little bit. I want to talk about my Jets. Oh, my Jets. Listen, nobody likes the Jets. It's okay. I know nobody likes the Jets, but I like the Jets. Am I a glutton for punishment? Yes, I am. But something happened this week in the world of my Jets that made me feel good. And I'm going to tell you what it was. Now, we know that bad news is no stranger to the New York Jets, right? And the Jets' first round pick from a couple years ago, Mekhi Becton, busted up his knee after working hard to return from a knee injury. And he injured it again in training camp, and he's out. And what did my Jets do? They signed a Pro Bowl offensive tackle. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Joe Douglas strikes again. This man came out here and he signed Dwayne Brown to a 2-year, $22 million contract, which is just long enough for the Jets to figure out some sort of backup option. Hopefully, Dwayne Brown still got some juice. Dwayne Brown is a former Pro Bowl player. Great players usually don't become available, so it's questionable, you know, if he's that good, because he's still that good, because, you know, why would he be available otherwise? But the point is, Joe Douglas, the Jets GM, has made it a point that we are not going to go through the same cycle with these quarterbacks. Joe Douglas has made it a point that Jets fans will not be sitting here at the same time next year saying, oh, what about Zach Wilson? We don't know how good he is because the offensive line's not good. We don't know how good he is because we don't know if he has good receivers and running backs around him. No, sir. Joe Douglas has taken care of that. Joe Douglas has taken care of that. If you look at the Jets draft, they got the best running back in the draft. They got one of the best receivers in the draft. They got a pass rusher in the draft. They got the best cornerback in the draft. Yo. I am not used to saying stuff that's this exciting about my New York Jets, okay? About my New York Jets. The New York Jets have been so bad the past couple years. I'm not going to lie. I've been on the ropes as a fan. I've been on the ropes. But you know what? The Jets are giving us something that the Jets fans have not had in a very long time, and that's hope. Give it up for hope. We all love hope. You need hope. At the beginning of every football season, you need a renewed hope. And I feel like, for the first time in a long time, the Jets have hope. So, one more thing I want to touch on before we get up out of here. Thank you if you're still hanging with me from the beginning. So the game dropped an album. I think it's called Drillmatic. And I have not heard this album yet. But what I have heard is that this album is 30 tracks long. 30 tracks long.
Oh, hell no.
I mean, that's a lot of tracks, dog. So listen, let me ask y'all a question. When's the last time you heard a good, not 30 song album? I don't know when I've ever heard a 30 song album. But when's the last time you even heard a good double album? I'm not saying that you heard a double album and every song of it was terrible, right? I think Drake dropped a double album a couple of albums ago. Jay did the Blueprint 2, The Gifts and the Curse. Life After Death, that was a pretty good double album. But like, for the most part, right? Like, once you get past 16, 17 songs, the quality, you know what I mean? Like, there's no way you put 30 good songs on an album. Now, here's what I'm going to do. Since I talked about it, I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to listen to every one of those 30 tracks. I'm going to listen to every one of those 30 tracks. And I'm be able to tell you for real whether or not I thought it was a good album. I mean, the interesting thing about Game, right? Like, Game is a rapper that don't really have, like, one style, right? Like, that's, like, his talent. It's like a gift and a curse, right? Like, he's so good at doing any style that you have no idea what his style is, right? He can come out and rap and sound just like anybody. Like, it's really amazing what the way Game is able to do that. But 30 tracks is a lot. That's a lot for anybody. 30 tracks for whoever is your favorite rapper or greatest rapper, Jay-Z, Drake, J. Cole, Kendrick, Future. 30 tracks. That's a hell of a lot of tracks. That's a hell of a lot of tracks. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this for you out there, listener. I'm going to listen to the whole album. I'm listening to the whole Drillmatic. And I'm going to tell you at what point I'm losing interest, because you're going to. There's no way you're not going to lose interest in a 30-song album. I'm going to tell you if it was good. I'm going to tell you if it was bad. If it was same old, same old. If it was, you know, Game's best album. If it's one of his worst. I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you all of that. So stay tuned. Come back and, you know, talk with your boy next week. And let's see where we get to with this Game album. All right. So that's all I got for y'all. That's all I got for y'all. I want to say thank y'all so much for spending a little bit of time with your boy. Like I said, I know you guys have so many options for your entertainment, for your information, for your football, sports, music, you know, all of that. And so I just want to say thank you for spending a few minutes of your time with me. No matter how you watch this, if you watch this on YouTube, go ahead and hit that like button. Okay, so we get this video boosted up. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so you subscribe to this channel. Go ahead and hit the notification bell so you get notified each and every time I drop some brand new fire content on this page. And if you really want to help out the channel, follow the show at Talking About Pod on Twitter. But if you really, really want to help out the channel, the best thing you can do is share this with somebody else. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Let's bring more people into the conversation. You know, once again, thank you guys so much. I'm TW. Peace out.